There it is.
Just blow on it. That'll do. Good morning. This is the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting of Thursday, May the 3rd. Call it to order and ask for a roll call.
Commissioner Wyatt.
Here.
Commissioner Melskow.
Here.
Chairperson Rose.
Here.
Commissioner Christie. Commissioner Rappa.
And let the record show that they are absent today. Okay. So we'll stand for a flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And the first speaker I have for public comment is David Dugan. And for the information of all, we ask that you put in speaker slips, which are available in that wooden box by the door. And we'll take public comment now on items that are not on the agenda. The agenda is available over to my left, your right. There's packages with the agenda and all of the staff reports. And that's it. Mr. Dugan.
Yeah, my name's Dave Dugan from Los Osos. I was going to also speak on the conformity issue, but I hear it's going to be delayed until June. So I'm going to speak towards... A couple of weeks ago, there was a stormwater management program, which the Board of Supervisors accepted just a couple of weeks ago. Requirements, new requirements by the regional board. And when I spoke towards that issue at the supervisors, I asked them, I pleaded with them, basically, that whenever... your body, their body, as well as any of the others that are involved with construction, permitting, and such what, consider what happened in Los Osos. That the housing was so densely packed, and the sewer septic systems are now considered not functional because of the density, that when you make any consideration on any subdivision or housing development, that you should remember and look at the basin plan, look towards the regional board's rules to make sure that you don't put people who are clearly not criminals in a situation where they're going to be found in violation because they have septic systems that are so densely packed because the housing is so close together. You need to keep that in consideration because right now there are 4,200 or so residents in Los Osos, so people living there, with most recently got notices of violation. And not to anything they personally did wrong, but are being held accountable as individuals, the county allowed homes to be so densely packed, and specifically between 1983 and 1988, before the moratorium came in, place, they were allowed to build up to 1,150 new homes. I believe over 900 were built. Even those 900 new homes, those residences, are in violation. And even though they were allowed to build between 1983 and 1988 prior to the moratorium going into play. So I would ask this board to consider that next time somebody comes up before you, any type of subdivision or building, to make sure that they can't be considered non-compliant because of the regional board saying you're too dense and your septic tanks aren't functioning properly. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close that and move on to a planning staff update. And Mr. Hogue, could you briefly comment on how we make sure we don't get ourselves into that box anymore? The too many septic tanks close together, I believe we have rules, 1 acre, 2.5 acres, that kind of thing?
Yes, that's correct. For new land divisions to have a
well and septic on the same site, you need 2.5 acres where there's community water. You can have a septic system on 1 acre. And then I think the basin plan allows for down to 20,000 square feet where there's leaching capacity of that exceeds 5 minutes per inch. I think that requires an exception or exemption through the Regional Water Quality Control Board. I'm kind of flying a little bit blind on that particular aspect. I don't consider myself an expert on the basin plan, but I think those are the general regulations. Matt, do you have any, or Mike, do you have any further details on how we regulate septic tanks as it would affect the Los Osos situation? See, neither one of them are taking the bait, so that will have to suffice as my answer.
Okay. Okay. Any other planning staff updates?
Just to remind the commission that you have a meeting next week. Normally you're not back-to-back, but remember this meeting got rescheduled from April 26th to accommodate the California Transportation Commission's meeting that they held down here, which was a rare occurrence and an honor. And your commission graciously changed your meeting to today. So that means that your next regular meeting is only 1 week away. And that's on May 10th. And your I might remind your commission and the public that your commission made the decision previously that the May 10th agenda would be used exclusively for your continued study session on the Ag Policy Review, and specifically on the policies 6, 8, and 24 from the Ag Open Space element, the ones on visitor-serving uses in agriculture, intensive agricultural facilities, and conversion of ag land. And we will have some additional information that stems from the last time you considered this in February and from some questions asked by individuals, including commissioners. And so we anticipate that we will have staff presentations at the beginning. There will be public here that will want to address your commission. We'll recommend that you take that testimony first, and then you start going through your discussion on each policy. I'll work with the chair to see if we can provide some structure so people know what to expect. We've been getting a lot of questions about when should I show up. I've been telling everyone at the beginning just to make sure.
Wise move on your part.
So just a heads up, that's what's happening. That's the only item on that agenda, at least at this point, unless you continue something from today to that agenda. But
and you're going to talk about, in general, there's a request to put all these policies together and not to have them. What that'll come up?
Actually, that relates to a specific pending ordinance amendment or group of ordinance amendments, and not the ag open space policies themselves. I'm sure it'll be that subject will be broached, and staff will be prepared to respond to it. We have just in brief, we have an approach that we're using to take those amendments through the hearing process, and there are people that feel it should be handled differently. And if you feel like you want to know about that, we can talk about it then. Okay. I think at this point, I don't have any further staff updates. Looking at staff, again, not seeing anyone.
Perhaps somebody could comment on the transportation meeting. Did anything of significance occur that we, or the general public, would want to know about?
The only thing I know is that the commission did approve money for the Highway 41, Highway 101 interchange improvements in Atascadero. I don't have details, but I believe it was a substantial funding commitment that will allow that project to proceed and maybe even to completion. I didn't think to check with COG staff to see what else might be of interest, but that's the only thing I'm aware of that would directly involve this county. There were other issues of interest to other parts of the state that they considered, because they're considering everything, not just items in this county. I can certainly check with COG staff and report back to you individually if you want.
That's okay. Thanks. Yeah.
And I guess I probably should have said that I am Warren Hogue from the Department of Planning and Building. I don't think I ever introduced myself, but for the record, that's who I am. Is there anything else that your commission wanted to ask me during staff updates?
Don't see any questions welling up. Thank you.
Okay, and I just ask that no one of you leave before the end of this meeting because you have a bare quorum. The actions that are before you today are all quasi-judicial, and that means that a majority of a quorum passes.
Two votes will get it.
Two votes will get it. You do not need a majority of a full membership because you don't have any legislative acts in front of you that I can recall. I think they're all land use permits or tract maps. So you're good to go.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda, and before we get in that, I notice I have an A, B, and C in my staff packet, but on the agenda I only see an A and a B. A being the... there it is. It's in the small print. Oh, okay.
It's hidden at the top.
It was hiding.
Any comments by the commission before I get to the public hearing?
Yes, I just wasn't sure how we would pull items from the consent agenda or would move that we would pull an item for discussion.
I'll bet we're going to have one here after the public comment.
So someone else brings that up.
Mr. Chair, I was going to suggest that you pull item A for discussion. We did receive some correspondence on that.
Well, I got to give the public their opportunity here.
Okay.
And with that, I'll move to the public, and I have one speaker slip, Morgan Rafferty.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Morgan Rafferty. I'm the Director of the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo. I hope you all received my letter yesterday requesting that you pull item A from the consent agenda and deny that request for an extension. My letter lists the reasons why I asked for that extension to be denied. There's new information. It's been 7 years since that EIR was prepared. Since that EIR was completed, a 90-foot drop in the water level has been identified. The RAC asked for and the board approved a resource capacity study for that area. And the findings that this extension would be based on are no longer supported. And Ag Policy 11 is violated. We believe it's Ag Policy 11 asked that the water be used for agriculture, not residential uses. And it's no longer consistent with the provisions of Title 22. And we believe that this extension should be denied today. Thank you.
Okay. And we did get your letter, and we also got one from North County Watch.
Oh, great.
On the same subject.
Okay.
And I did get a phone call last night.
Oh, yes.
Related to that subject.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Closing the public hearing, bring consent agenda back.
So I would move that we would pull item A.
Item A, we can do that. How about B and C, which is the time extension for track map 2523 and the minutes for March 22nd? Anybody want to?
Want to go ahead and take care of those?
Sure.
All right, I move to approve item B and C.
I'll second that motion.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
It's unanimous. Okay. Staff, give us a report on the item A, which is the fifth time extension for Trap Mac 2526, a 851-acre clustered subdivision.
I will lead off, Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building, and then probably there will be involvement from other staff members. This is a request for a time extension for a vesting tentative tract map that's northeast of Paso Robles or east of Paso Robles. It's a cluster subdivision, ag cluster, 851 acres. It's 42 one-acre lots, and there's a variety of other aspects to it. And then there's a open space parcel of 108 acres. It's agricultural parcel, actually. And this map is set to expire on October 25th. On March 23rd, the applicant requested the time extension. And this would be the fifth and final one-year time extension that they could have. The initial approval period's for 2 years. Then they can request up to 5 one-year time extensions, and they have done so up to today. So this would be the fifth and final time extension. If it's granted, it would be to October 25th, 2008. and in accordance with the resolution that was adopted in 2001. We've received correspondence yesterday from Eccleslaw that Ms. Rafferty just spoke of, and also from Sue Luft of North County Watch, that are first urging your commission to pull this for separate discussion from the consent agenda, which you have. Secondly, to either deny the time extension or to continue it for further consideration. And the basis for the request for denial of the time extension is that this is located in an area of documented groundwater depression, and that it should be denied on that basis because that's a changed circumstance from when the project was first approved. I'm not going to go into any more detail, but I think at this point it might be appropriate to... James, did you want to talk a little more about the groundwater information we have in the resource management system, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. I was the project manager for this tract a long time ago. Ryan, could you pull up the... there should be a map on the bottom. It's a PDF.
And now we need to swap screens.
So while Ryan is doing that, we have a PDF file of a figure from the Fugro report. There it is.
Can we make it full screen there?
A little bit of background information. this is a little complicated, so... I'm going to be thinking while I'm talking, and so I, when this project was approved, it was 2001. The latest information, water information at that time, was a Department of Water Resources study that came out in 1979. And reading through the EIR, it describes the DWR study as determining that there was a regional overdraft of the Paso Robles groundwater basin. However, it didn't determine that there was any cones of depression, like you see here on this map. That was the Fugro study in 2003 that used data from 1980 to 1997. If you look at that map, see if I can point to it on the screen here.
This is high-tech stuff. We can get, oh, man.
Oh, look at that. Let's see. I guess the project is right about here. We have another map that we're working on, but we're reporting back to the Board of Supervisors in about a month on this cone of depressions. I would think it's right about there. So it is over this cone of depression. Reading the EIR, it appears that the EIR, using the DWR data, stated that there was a regional overdraft, but didn't identify the cone of depression. Fugro, I believe the result of the Fugro study said there isn't a regional overdraft, but there is this cone of depression here. Matter of fact, this was the major finding of the Fugro study. The Water Resource Advisory Council Commission just a few months ago asked the board to declare a level of severity. According to RMS, the board in January of this year did place an R level of severity 1 on the Paso Robles groundwater basin and asked staff to come back with a scope for a resource capacity study to study this this cone of depression. And also in reading the EIR, because of that regional overdraft, the EIR concluded that there was a Class 1 water impact. So, and this is where I'm might need some more time to think about this, but it appears that the EIR might have reached the right conclusion, but for the wrong reasons. but that, which I suppose might be okay, but it begs the question. I'm reading the letters from EcoSlow and North County Watch, and I'm left sort of wondering what we did with the findings for Ag Policy 11, for instance, which reserves groundwater resources for agriculture and not residential uses. When a regional overdraft, I don't know what we would have found. With this particular situation, if it had been known, would we have reached a different conclusion? That's an interesting question, which I don't think we're ready to say one way or the other. There was the other mention in I guess it was, EcoSlo's letter about the Title 22 findings that water resources are adequate to serve the proposed development, including residential uses, existing and proposed agricultural operations on the site and vicinity. That's another interesting finding that if we had known this information, would we have made a different, reached a different conclusion? And I'm not sure. I know the analysis certainly would have been different if this had been known or had been included in the EIR at that time. So if your commission wants to look into this, which it might be worth doing, we'll need a little bit of time. I've been trying to consult with some of the water folks in Public Works this morning, but wasn't able to reach them. If I had a little bit more time, I'd be able to respond a little bit better to this. And I don't really have that much more to say.
Okay, I have some personal knowledge of it. I thought this was in 2003 that we approved this, but you know, memory is a little vague on that. But I do recall, because I'm a member of the North County Water Resources Forum, who pushed the board to get the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin Study going. And one of the reasons we did, because of the Kona Depression that you've identified on the map, which has been well known for some time, and it's thought to be caused by three reasons: big golf courses, big city wells, and big agricultural wells, all in that general vicinity. And the information that we were given is that this pumping causes a cone of depression. Water from elsewhere in the basin goes to make up the deficit in that area. But, you know, like we hear in the poem all the time, you have cones of depression, and so you have, you know, 800-foot wells that can pump adequately, but the 200-foot well that the neighbor has next door is running out of water and obviously are very concerned. So I'm hearing you say you'd like a little more information to come back with this, or a little more time to come.
Well, we're a little bit uncomfortable speaking to it on a short-term basis, and I don't want your commission to make a decision based just on what we're saying today, because I don't think it's I just don't feel comfortable doing that, because I don't know if that's the sum total of the information out there. We would need a little bit more time.
Can you be ready by our second meeting in May?
If I may weigh in.
Please.
I would recommend that if you do continue this item, you only continue it to May 10th. We don't have the luxury of continuing it to after June 5th, when the board will consider the RMS issue, because you may notice that our regular counsel isn't here. They're at a out of the area commitment. But I had a short conversation with Mr. Orton yesterday before he left town, and he made it clear that we have an obligation under the MAP Act to act on these time extensions within a certain period of time. And I was trying to go through the MAP Act to pull that out. But it's pretty complicated, and I haven't actually focused on it. So what he recommended to me yesterday is that you either act on it today favorably, or if you want more information, or if you feel like you want to deny the time extension, that you continue it to May 10th to allow staff to develop a possible finding.
So, Mr. Chairman, I got some questions of Mr. Caruso.
There was one more thing I wanted to add, if I might, Mr. Melskow. So we were talking about the MAP Act. The MAP Act says you can approve or deny an extension. You cannot conditionally approve an extension except for the length of time of the time extension. The Title 21, our local ordinance, Real Property Division Ordinance, allows up to 5 1-year time extensions. It says that the commission, or the advisory agency, in this case the commission, may extend or conditionally extend the time at which such MAP expires. It doesn't give you the ability to go beyond what the MAP Act says, though. The only way you can conditionally extend a MAP is just to time, not to substantive requirements. There is no requirement in Title 21 for you to reaffirm the findings originally made for approval of the map. That's not specified in this section. But there should be a basis for your decision.
That confused me. Gene, ask a question. Maybe I'll.
There should be
maybe
a
help.
let me go on a little bit more.
Thanks.
That might help. If you decide you're going to deny the time extension, there should be a factual basis for that, a finding. And it's not required that you have to reaffirm the findings that were originally made for approval of the tract map, but you should establish a finding for why you're denying it now. In this case, it would be the more recent information on the groundwater depression, but we would want to have some time and effort to work on that wording or bring you back additional information before you make that decision. Does that help?
No. Okay. Gene's going to ask a good question here. I know he will.
Mr. Caruso, this depression, what do you measure it against? Over on the coast, we measure it against sea level, but I don't see any ocean close to Paso Robles. What do you use?
Remember, you're talking to someone with limited knowledge, but I will tell you as much as I know, which will take a couple of seconds. According to the information in the Fugro report, those figures in that map that show dropping water levels are based below they're absolute drops. Water level used to be 100 feet below ground surface in 1980. It's now 190 feet below ground surface. So it's just the absolute drop in the water levels in these certain wells.
Over
1980-1997
okay.
was the data.
If this project's denied eventually, first question, is it planted to grapes now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, all three phases were planted.
Okay. 850 acres?
I don't think it's quite. It's probably a little bit less than that because it has the buffers for the lots and the lots themselves. It's maybe almost 600 acres probably.
All right, so this is denied. What's the zoning? What could they do residential-wise if they went to some other plan?
Well, this is an ag cluster.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking theoretically here.
Yeah.
They could reapply for an ag cluster.
You say they could reapply?
Should reapply if this time extension. Well, actually, you know, the Warren, I believe the time is not up until October. So if the time extension was denied, they could still record the map as long as they recorded it before October whatever of this year.
What I'm saying, if they lose the ag cluster and decide to go ahead and develop just based on the zoning of the property, they could, put how many houses?
Two.
No? Two?
Yeah, well, actually, there might be a couple of underlying lots, so it could be two per underlying lot.
No, James, remember the 808-acre parcel has been approved, and I'm not sure if the contract's been executed yet, but if it's in preserve and under contract, the 808-acre parcel could only have one house plus whatever farm support quarters they qualify for.
We'd have to check to see if that Land Conservation Act contract.
I don't know if it's been recorded yet.
I doubt it. They would do that with the recordation of the map.
What I'm looking at here is kind of the long-term picture, and here we're getting 800 acres with a conservation agreement to keep it in agriculture, right?
You're getting an open space, right,
yeah,
open space in the Williamson Act.
Yeah. So I think we're getting benefits here that we need to look at and look at what the alternative might be if we don't allow this project.
Right, and Commissioner Malskow, that's one of the main things that commissioners throughout the life of ag clusters have looked at is they've been figuring out, all right, is the trade-off adequate? You know, in this case, you've got 800 some odd acres of an open space in return for how many lots was there? 41?
42.
That's a sort of a value judgment, I suppose. Is that a good deal or not? I guess you could say.
Going back to Gene's question here, I think the idea was we could take the 800 acres and because it's all irrigated ag or a good percentage irrigated ag, that means we could subdivide it down into 40-acre lots and put a house on every one of those 40 acres.
Well, you could apply to subdivide to 40 acres.
Right, good. And
as long as they had irrigated ag, it would meet today's rules, but they chose to go to this ag cluster, which meant, you know, little two-acre lots.
With 100% density bonus, which is the okay. Which sort of is the one of the big issues about ag clusters is that 100% density bonus.
Well,
I did have a question.
Good, help us out.
Mr. Caruso, please. It seems to me that a 90-foot drop in the water table since the EIR was done would be significant. Is there some question of that? This is new to me, but it seems like a significant drop.
I think that's what we're here. Why we're here today talking about this. Is it a significant drop? Is it important in the consideration of a time extension for this tract? And this is not an easy question. It's not. It's rather complex, and that's why I'm here. Please, begging off to. But that's one of the decisions you have to make: is what is the significance of this water situation in relation to this project? And I think staff has taken it really as far as we can go on the short term this morning.
Okay. Well, I would like to move that we would continue the item then, if only for the week, and to give staff more time to respond to this. To continue it to May 10th.
Excuse me. Are you going to give the applicant a chance to speak before you make a motion?
I didn't know you were here. I'm sorry. I'll reopen the public hearing just certainly to hear from the applicant.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a public hearing, but you do provide opportunity for public comment on consent items.
Right.
And you did that, but I don't think it was clear to this person that okay. was her opportunity, and I'd recommend that you.
Well, I apologize for not getting in. If you'd be so kind as give me a speaker slip when you're. Oh, you got one now. Give it to the lady there, she'll.
I'm sorry, I don't attend many Planning Commission meetings, so I wasn't quite sure of that, plus something on the consented agenda. I just had a brief comment to make, just reminding.
And you got to give your name.
I'm Tammy Poe with Vaughn Surveys on behalf of the applicant. Just a reminder that this is an approved project that was approved quite some time ago. The majority of the conditions of approval have been made, and we are just requesting the time extension to just complete those up and plan on having the map finalized and recorded very soon. Thank you.
Okay, and the reason, Ms. Poe, and the reason why you couldn't complete it in the time? There's
an extensive amount of conditions on this project. It's just taken a lot of time to take care of.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I'm kind of torn here. I'll second the motion for discussion. Because I've been involved with this North County water issue for a long time, I'm quite well aware of the pumping depression that's been going on for some time, which is the reason why the Paso Robles groundwater basin got pushed up to the top of the study list, largely because of this pumping depression, which has existed for a very long time. And I do recognize in 2001, and Mr. Hogue was right, it was 2001, not 2003, that this was approved, that evidently when they did the EIR, which I presume was probably in 2000 when they started work on that, the information that Fugro and Cleith and Associates were collecting wasn't available. And so they used the DWR report, which was from 1979, which did have that 30,000 overdraft. So it would be nice to come back with a little more data, but I don't really think it's going to change anything. I haven't seen all the data, so I can't say that yet. But I'm willing to let staff come back. And I know you haven't heard from Public Works yet, and it would be nice to know what, you know, to have on the record what the thing was. I don't think the pumping depression has changed 90 feet from 2001. It's probably gone down some because there's more golf courses and more vineyards in that area.
And maybe the applicant could get back and have an update on their water use. I know vineyards often use a lot of water in their early phases that they don't use later on, and perhaps, you know, after the vineyards are mature and the houses are in existence, the water will remain the same. So I'll support the motion, although I think it's just going to be for the benefit of having the information on the public record.
A good question on the motion. Mr. Hoag, how can we delay this till the 10th? Because that's already been publicized to the public. How would we get it on there?
You can continue an item in an open session that's been listed on an agenda to another regular meeting. And for the benefit of the public, we can do a core agenda distribution, which the Brown Act would require 72 hours in advance. But I'm not sure that that's even required, since in open session, we're continuing an item listed on the agenda to another meeting. And this isn't actually an official public hearing anyway. It's just an item, a business item.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Looking over to esteemed counsel, would you like to expand on what I said?
I agree with what Mr. Hope said. Out of an abundance of caution, you might want to issue a core agenda item.
Okay, and you are?
I am Warren Jensen.
Okay, thank you.
I have one more question on this.
Sure.
Am I correct in my understanding, then, to approve this extension, we would need to make the finding that there's no significant change to community resource capacity? Is that part of the findings that we need to make in this case of an extension, or?
No.
It is not?
No, there's no specified findings in either Title 21 or the MAP Act for time extensions.
No, wait a minute.
Oh.
That was the source of good point, because we've often had time extensions. It seems like we have had to make a specific finding that there hasn't been any change in the ordinances and there haven't been any changes under the material on the ground.
Mr. Chair, those were tract maps that were associated with land use permits, and there is a requirement on a third time extension for a land use permit that you determine there's been no changes, that the findings can still be made, et cetera. There is a...
Well, it was a cluster, so it was
a... Okay.
We use the extension...
Mr. Crusoe's adding something.
We use the extension process for... Do you want to speak to that, Ms. Griffin? Or?
Yeah, put that on the record, somebody.
Sorry.
Hey, who are you?
Amy Griffin, County Planning. Why not add another face to this? For the combination where you have a tract map with a conditional use permit or a land use permit, we use the rules for tract maps to continue. And we actually have a condition that gets put in the conditional use permits that say that. So
actually, there's a land use ordinance section which says the time extensions for land use permits that are with tract maps are to follow those for the tract maps.
So the tract map rule says we don't have to be concerned, whereas the conditional use permit, a.k.a. shopping center or something like that, would have to.
Right.
And County Council's nodding his head in agreement.
I agree with that also. The particular section is 21.06.
Can you please turn your microphone on?
It's hot rust.
It'd be green on and red off.
Yeah, it's on.
There you go.
There we go. Yes, I agree with what was just said by planning staff. The particular section is 21.06.010, subsection C. There is no need to make findings in this particular matter.
That was very useful. In that case, I'm not going to support the motion, because what would be the point? Okay, call for the question.
I helped myself there, didn't
you
I?
You did, and I thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No. Excuse me. I made the motion to continue this item, yes. And so, yes, excuse me.
You're voting to continue?
Yes.
Okay.
Chairperson Rose?
No.
Commissioner Malskow?
No.
And the reason for my no vote is because, as explained by Mr. Hogan, County Council, it's not going to make any difference. So. Thank you very much. Glad we had this conversation.
And now... your commission needs to make a motion on the request itself for a time extension.
Okay.
I will move approval of consent item A.
I will second that then.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
It was an
aye. It was unanimous. Okay. Thank you very much. We've completed the consent agenda. Moving on to hearing item number one.
Hearing item number one is a continued hearing to consider an appeal by Ososis Community Service District of a planning director determination. It is located in the community of Los Osos, county file number DTM-2006-00002, Mike Wilkin, project manager.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Mike Wilkin, county planning staff. The attorneys for the Los Osos Services District have agreed to a continuance of this matter until June the 14th, and staff recommends that this item be continued until June the 14th.
Okay. Anyone here from the public that cannot come back June the 14th? Seeing none, motion to continue?
Yes, I would move that we continue the item to June 14th.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Malskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. Moving on to hearing item number two.
Item two is a hearing to consider request by Tony Ritter for a reconsideration of vesting tentative tract map 2637. It is located in the community of San Miguel, county file number SUB-2003-00164, Ryan Hostetter, project manager.
Ryan Hostetter, county planning staff. Thank you, commissioners. The reason why we are here for this project is the applicant has requested that we reconsider a condition of approval for the proposed project, which was approved on the March 8th Planning Commission meeting. Specifically, the condition that the applicant would like revised is number 39 of Exhibit B, and this relates to basically control of the open space parcels. And the way that the condition was originally approved was that it would be put into either a homeowners association or some other land conservancy in the future to have control over both open space parcels. However, afterwards, the applicant has informed us that this isn't going to work for their project as they have an agreement with the current property owner. And I'm going to put a graphic up on the screen here while we... The agreement with the current property owner between the developer is allowing the developers to do this project if the open space lot to the north, which is lot 27, remain in control of the person who is in that building envelope on that open space parcel, and that is the current owner of the property, the Netto family, and they are living in an existing house on in the open space lot proposed 27, and the applicant is requesting a revision to condition number 39 to allow for open space lot 27 to be in control by the Netto family. I'm available for questions.
Okay, the way I recall, and I'm very sorry that this had to happen. I was surprised when Mr. Ritter's agent called me, or maybe it was Mr. Ritter, saying, what happened? I got these conditions that don't match what you did, and I watched the hearing. And so I watched the hearing, and Maya took an awfully long time to download. But and I, when I was making the motion, I said, for the one open space lot, the Homeowners Association should have. And then I watched Ms. Griffin put it on the screen for both, and I didn't catch that, and neither did any of us. And so the way I see it, what I wanted in the motion, to have the homeowners association have the one control over the one lot and the owner of the other lot have control over that lot. That didn't happen, and dug on it. And thanks, staff, for bringing it back here. Any other questions for staff?
I'd just like to hear comment first. I do have some questions. I'll hold off.
Okay. Okay. This is public hearing. I'll open it up. I have two speakers, both the agents, Mr. Russ Thompson, followed by Mr. Tony Ritter.
Good morning, Commission. Russ Thompson, R. Thompson Consulting. And yeah, we appreciate being back here to clarify this issue. This ownership pattern, or the Nettos retaining that open space parcel, has been part of the project all along, and we just feel it was a slight oversight in the wording of the condition. And we're in agreement with the staff report and their recommendation on the revised wording for the condition that works. And it's a critical part of this project because the previous owner, Mrs. Netto, does want to retain the parcel to remain on the property and live there. And so ownership by a homeowners association or an outside agency right now doesn't work. So we would just encourage you to approve the revised language, and if you have any questions, we're here to answer them.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Ritter? That's the last speaker slip. Anyone else? Couldn't talk to it.
My name is Tony Ritter, owner of the project. I just wanted to affirm what Russ has said, that the Netto family has owned this project for the last 100 years. It was actually the Stanley family that was her father. And this has always been a part of the project, that we did it back our very first pre-planning meeting back in April 2003. We brought that up because we brought the project, we were going to go for it as just a regular 6,000 square foot single family project, and the county suggested us to go into cluster, and the whole thing was, how are we going to make this work, because we got to deed 2 acres back to her, part of our contract. So we've been working on the premise the whole time that it was okay. We've had numerous meetings with advisory board, staff, some of the board of supervisors, and we were led to believe this is okay. Watching the tape from last, in my own recollection of last time, agrees with you, Commissioner Ruse, that you said the one parcel and then it got changed and it wasn't caught. So anybody have any questions for me?
Ms. Wyatt?
No. My questions are more directed towards staff now. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else to speak to this item? That's your for the next one. Okay, close public hearing and bring it back for staff. Or
yes,
comment?
Sure. Okay, I have some questions. Am I correct, Ms. Steph, that I don't know who's best. I see Jan DeLeo's here from Parks. Also, Ryan's here. I'm reading the land use ordinance and seeing that there's an open space requirement of 40%. So the calculation for this 12-acre parcel comes out to be about 4.87 acres. So that's what we're seeing here with these two open space parcels. We're seeing 4.88 acres, 1/100th of an acre more than the requirement.
That's correct.
Okay, so if this requirement is just providing literally the minimal open space amount, is the intent of this open space then public space? What is the intent of this 40% open space requirement on this cluster?
Cami Griffin, County Planning Staff. Really, the open space is a trade-off for allowing smaller lots. It is never intended to be public. An applicant can choose to dedicate it to the public if they so desire, but it's really just a trade-off. The lots are smaller than 6,000 square feet, and in trade-off for that, part of the lot remains open.
Okay. So even if half of this open space requirement is still in private ownership, then that doesn't defeat the intent of the open space requirement?
No, really the key is that it doesn't get developed, and that the the conditions require the recording of an open space agreement that will prohibit development except in the where the existing house is.
Okay, so this would still meet that intent. I guess that was my main question, really. Maybe I would bring it back to our board then, because as I understood our intent in this subdivision, it was for public open space and use the park. Was that not the intent of our commission when we required that those?
Well, one, the little tot lot is the park amenity thing, and then there was going to be a trail component. They were going to offer some land for a trail going through San Miguel. And then what my intention was when I made the motion is that the one lot would be available for control by the homeowners association so that the people could go down there and commune with nature, so to speak, but only on the one lot.
Okay. And I guess my thinking was something like we may have wanted to go to some kind of estate for life or something with the second lot that we may honor the builders.
And as I recall, Ms. Rappa suggested that, but then the applicant brought forth the point that he again made today that they wanted to have to stay. The lady would live there forever, and her family would then have that opportunity also.
Okay, so that wasn't the intent of at least maybe a few...
No, Ms. Rappa wanted to go there, but that was not okay with the applicant.
Okay, so we did sort of attempt that. Well, I would just point out here that the developer's, you know, personal deal with the seller isn't necessarily the problem of the public here. To some degree, this project could be reformed in some other way. I'm not sure we need to do that here, but I'm not sure that needs to be a primary concern of our commission. But if the feeling is the intent of the open space requirement is met with one lot publicly owned, then
well,
I guess we're okay.
As Ms. Griffin said, there's no need to give the public anything, any control over the open space lot, other than the commitment never to develop the thing. So, like I know there's a lot in Templeton that called a vineyard tract that was going to be a vineyard, but now in fact is cows, and the neighbors are concerned about that, but still it was his lot, so his choice to go from vines to cows was...
Still open space.
Okay,
and just to double check, since Ms. Leo is here from Parks, you're comfortable with this, that the trail easements have been provided and the tot lot got moved to what seemed to be a reasonable place on the open space parcel?
I'm Jan DeLeo with County Parks, and yes, Ryan and I had talked yesterday about what was being proposed, and I feel comfortable with what is being proposed.
Okay.
I'll go along with that then. I'm comfortable with that, with this information. I just did want to take this opportunity, since this has come back to us, to just look at this subdivision here, kind of comparing it to our own smart growth criteria. I know it was noted in the staff report that this meets sort of some of the criteria, but I think we just missed a few opportunities. And so I won't deny the project because of them, but I just think maybe we could have done better on a few sort of simple smart growth criteria here that I'm not sure the project met, that I think maybe we could have asked for. At this point, I'm not going to make a motion that we go back and ask for them. But a few kind of simple smart growth criteria for residential single-family characteristics that I'm not sure we seized the opportunity to ask for. And one thing is just that at least 75% of the garages are located at least 5 feet behind the front of the house. It looked like this project had garages still prominently featured at the front of the structures. So that would just have been one of the things that I would hope maybe we'll see done a little differently in some of these things that come before us. Another thing, is all of this project considered affordable housing by our standard, or any of it? Okay, another smart growth criteria on our own county checklist that we've missed here and not seized an opportunity, that some of the units be affordable, a range between 15% and 30%. And we didn't require that here. So I would like people to know, I would hope we would try a little harder to see that in some of these that we're approving next time. Also, just simple things that could be done that maybe we'll see next round. Setbacks are varied on the street. Each group of three adjacent houses contain at least one house whose front yard setback differs from those of its neighbors by a minimum of 5 feet. Some of these things wouldn't have cost the developer money, could have been incorporated into this project. Maybe if there are some small changes allowed, we could still see some of them. Creates a continuation of the existing neighborhood. Development provides a series of through street connections within the site that connect to other through streets in the surrounding area. Some of these streets connect, and I think there was talk of eventually extending one of the roads. So it may sort of meet that criteria, but not as well as we could as far as continuing any existing grid pattern of the neighborhood. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to bring that up because it did come back to us, and I don't think we did that full sort of discussion justice.
I could agree with some of your points, but I'm looking at the tract map with the on page 253 Granted, I don't have the big map they gave me. It looks like there's quite a bit of variation in the houses, especially on that Verde Street. They seem to vary quite a bit. You know, I think he did meet some of your needs. But do we have a motion?
Go ahead.
Well, you know me as a chair. I don't like to do
okay.
that.
All right.
I do my work.
I move. To recommend that the Planning Commission review and revise condition number 39 of Exhibit B, conditions of approval for Tract 2637, to share the following.
And could you, just summarize what's on page 21 there of our staff report? Is that what you're asking?
Well, prior to final map recordation, an open space easement shall be recorded for the open space parcels number 27 and 60. Lot number 60 is to be held in common by the Homeowners Association or transferred to a public trustee conservancy agency approved by the Department of Planning and Building. Open space lot number 27 can be held in either private ownership, the Homeowners Association ownership, or transferred to a public trustee conservancy agency approved by the Department of Planning and Building. The open space parcels are to be maintained in such in
perpetuity.
Perpetuity. The existing residence is allowed to remain with open space parcel number 27, as there can be one building envelope within the open space parcel. The one building envelope on parcel 27 for the existing residence shall be shown on the final map. Okay.
And that's it.
Does that cover it?
So what you read there was the exact staff report, right?
Right, okay. Right.
Mm-hmm. Is there a second?
I will second, yes.
Okay, roll call.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. Okay, moving on to item number 3.
Item number 3 is a hearing to consider request by Charlie Lackey for a third and final one-year time extension for minor use permit D010133P. It is located east of the community of Oceano, county file number D010133P, Ryan Hostetter, project manager.
Good morning again, Ryan Hostetter, county planning staff. The project before you is a request by Charlie Lackey for a third time extension for his minor use permit, coastal development permit. The project is located just on the southern edge of the community of Oceano within the agricultural land use category. It's on the corner of Silver Spur Place and 22nd Streets. The project originally approved three structures, two barns, one of them being a animal barn and tack room, the other being a packing shed for the agricultural operation and a single-family residence, all clustered together. This is an overall site plan, so they're all together in that red circle. This is a zoomed-in version of that. The barn is a 30-by-24 structure at the top there. Then the packing shed is right next to it, and to the south is the single-family home. And the driveway is on the left that goes out to Silver Spur Place. There's some elevations of the barn is on top, and the packing shed are just below. They're approximately 20 feet in height. And this is the single-family home that will be proposed. Your commission has some findings necessary to comply with in order to allow the third time extension. They're listed briefly on this PowerPoint. First, and most importantly, the applicant cannot be granted a third time extension unless there are reasons out of their control to be valid until May 3rd, 2008. I'm available for questions if you have any.
And you can see why Ms. Wyatt and I were concerned about the previous project wanting to apply the same kind of rules that this one had. And this is because it's a conditional use permit and not a tract map. I just got to ask, why did we have to replant 180 avocado trees? Why? What was the thinking there?
The ordinance requires actually on parcels less than 10 acres, which this one is almost 5 acres, that a primary use be established before just a barn is built. And the applicant had come in to originally just start by building the barn, and they could either do it by establishing the primary use, which would be the agricultural operation, or by submitting plans and having a home reviewed. And so the applicant could choose between the two, and he decided to have the avocados planted first.
Okay. Said no. Other questions for staff? I was interested to read this letter. It looked like that would make a good plot for some TV reality show. Things could go wrong, did go wrong, or something. Okay, seeing no questions, this is public hearing. Open up to the applicant, Mr. Bruce. And anyone else want to speak to it? Get your speaker slip in now.
Chairman, Commissioners, I'm Scott Bruce at 119 Narlene Way in Pismo. I'm a friend of Charlie's. I'm just helping put his information together to present to you today. We agree with staff on all counts and ask that you support this third time extension until May of 2008. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any others? Closing the public hearing, giving it back to the commission. Further discussion? Action?
Ready for motion?
You bet.
Okay. I'll move to approve the third time extension to be valid until May 3rd of 06 for this minor use permit coastal development plan based on findings in Exhibit A, the original findings, the findings for the time extension, and original conditions of approval for the project as attached. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, 2008.
2008.
I was wondering about that when I said it.
You're thinking and talking at the same time.
I'll second.
My bifocals didn't focus that.
I see. Okay. Discussion. Roll call.
Commissioner Milskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. Okay, it's 10 o'clock, time for a 10 o'clock break. Come back at 10:15, and we'll start with item 4. Meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission back in session, and introduce item number 4, please.
Item number four is a hearing to consider request by Mayor Harnish for a tentative tract map, 2852. It is located north of the city of Arroyo Grande. County file number SUB 2005-00211. Michael Conger, project manager.
Good morning, Chairman Rose and members of the commission. Michael Conger, county planning staff. The project before you is a request for a tract map to create three parcels. The project site is located on the southwest corner of Earhart Road and Old Oak Park Road, approximately a half a mile north of the Arroyo Grande city limits. The project site's in the residential suburban land use category, which is shown on in white on this map. This is an aerial photo of the project site, which is outlined in black. The proposed parcel lines are shown with a broken black line. Existing development is right in this area. It's just a single family residence manufactured home, and the other lots are not currently developed. This is the proposed tract map. Parcels 1 and 2 would be 2.5 acres each, with parcel 3 at 4.7 acres. The reason we're processing this as a tract map with only three lots is that the applicants have recently subdivided an adjacent lot into an additional three lots, so the total lots are actually six. Here's a view of the site from the intersection of Old Oak Park Road and Earhart Road. And you can see there's a lot of vegetation along.
My name is Gunther Meyer Harnish. And for our children, we have to, I'm writing our wills right now. And so we want to subdivide our.
Okay. And you're in agreement with the conditions as the staff has proposed them?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public? Seeing none, close the public hearing, bring it back to the commission for questions, actions.
Okay, yes. Some comments, I guess. Since we're getting into this, I'll start. I appreciate the applicant's desire to divide their property for their children and to do what they want. But this is a small project, but I'm feeling some angst. Again, back to our own county's sort of plan for smart and orderly growth. We say we want sort of smart and orderly growth and to avoid the fracturing of rural lands, and then we keep getting these smaller subdivisions. So I'm having some difficulty with this. Staff is recommending that we approve this. I guess I would just point out to the one document here that suggests maybe this isn't something we want to do, the Air Pollution Control District. So it's our page 444 and 448. So, just questioning that this is consistent, or suggesting that this is potentially inconsistent with our own land use policies. And the Air Pollution Control District has provided us a letter which discusses the potential inconsistencies and just notes that this isn't consistent with our own planning compact communities strategy, where increasing development densities within urban areas is preferable over increasing densities in rural areas. So here we are, and I have this vision of the next 10 years of my life sitting here doing this, approving these subdivisions of rural lands. So can someone help me, staff? How do we get past the Air Pollution Control District suggestion that this isn't smart growth? And then moving to page 488 of our staff packet, this project, you know, again, I'll read this, and I'm sorry it's a little boring maybe to some, but this project, this is our letter from the Air Pollution Control District dated April 12th. This project, like so many others, falls below our emission significance thresholds and is therefore unlikely to trigger a finding of significant air quality impacts requiring mitigation. However, we are very concerned with the cumulative effects resulting from the ongoing fracturing of rural land and increasing residential development in areas far removed from commercial services and employment centers. We believe that it is important to emphasize to decision makers that subdivision and future development on these and similar rural parcels throughout the county allows a pattern of development to continue that is ultimately unsustainable. So,
Mr. Chairman? Perhaps,
someone. Thank you, Ms. Griffin.
What you've read is Cami Griffin County Planning staff. What you've read is the Air Pollution Control District stock letter. You will see that letter on every rural subdivision, regardless of its location. This particular property is only a half a mile from the city limits. The Oak Park Interchange has significant commercial development. Half a mile is considered walking distance. This is consistent with the zoning. And in this particular instance, I actually believe their letter, using their stock letter, which is their standard approach. They are trying to tell the decision makers, stop approving subdivisions in the rural area. But in this particular instance, I actually think their stock letter was a little off base. But let's move this one 10 miles outside of the city. They're going to send that same letter. Staff is probably going to be making the same recommendations for approval if it's consistent with zoning. And that's really the issue here. Until the Board of Supervisors makes policy that changes either the minimum parcel sizes out in the zoning or establishes more clear direction or more clear policy that prohibits or limits subdivisions in the rural areas, we're obligated under our general plan as staff to be recommending approval to you as the decision makers. Certainly it's within your purview to not approve them, but you're going to continue to see recommendations for approval. The issue with Air Pollution Control District is a little odd because they can't reach that level of significance to say, hey, we got a major problem here, EIR, big issue. And that's why they write that letter with kind of left hand, right hand. But that's the issue. This particular case is actually not that far. Sidewalk within the city limits, when you hit the county, the sidewalk in.
The Oak Park Boulevard is split between three jurisdictions within the course of less than a mile between the freeway and where Noyce Road takes off from Old Oak Park Road. And the parts that are within Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande have curb gutter and sidewalk. The west side between where the Pismo Beach city limits ends and to that intersection of Old Oak Park and Noyce Road on the west side does not have sidewalk, but across the street it does on the Arroyo Grande city side. So you would have a walkable path, but you would have to cross Oak Park to do it. But that's not an unreasonable thing to do.
So sounds like a man who lives near there.
I've been involved in that area for about 35 years, yeah.
You know, Cami's right. The Air Pollution Control District has a very predictable response, and, you know, they're charged with certain things, and what I believe they would like to see is all the cities developed. We have 35-story apartment buildings, and we have elevated trains or subways that get us from work to home. And, yeah, that would cut down on air pollution, but people don't want that. Only people, let's see, there's a comment, the only thing worse than sprawl is density. People don't want to be packed in so close. They don't want to live in these multi-story apartment buildings. You know, but they don't want sprawl either.
We want everything, yes.
But, you know, I think Ms. Griffin hit it exactly on the head. It is zoned residential suburban, a.k.a. one-acre parcels, provided you can meet some sewer water requirements. And, you know, yeah, this is probably going to come back again in another 10 years when they take the 4.5 acre and they get some community water or something going there, and it'll be down to 1 acre parcels. But it's zoned for that. And until we change the zoning, I don't think we can tell people who have purchased residential suburban lots that they cannot go down to those minimums?
Well, I would just like to chime in and say I agree with you to a large degree, and this is why this, even though it's a very small project, this has caused me angst. And I find it difficult because as a planning commission, I believe it's our job to look at the future of our county and how these insignificant projects cumulatively will impact our county over the next years. And I guess I agree that I see that it's within the zoning, but if we're here to look at orderly development and think about the impacts, and we just keep approving these one by one, I don't think we're doing our job as planners.
Commissioner Rose, maybe I can help Commissioner Wyatt's angst just a little.
She's groomed for a lot of angst here. You got an next
years. I don't know that I can completely get rid of your angst, but this is very high on planning department's radar. It is something that our long-range planning division is going to tackle. It is an item that we'll be putting in front of the board as part of policy recommendations relative to growth management, relative to the rural area plan. This is something that we are aware as you fracture, especially as your communities start to have resource or infrastructure problems, issues, that the tendency then is to just shift out into the rural areas and continue to fracture the rural areas. And so I don't know if that will make your angst any better, but it is on our radar, and we are actively trying to pursue some things through policy changes to address those concerns.
So I guess I would just comment then to the commissioners that I won't be supporting this development, and I fully encourage our planning staff to move this along or to the board, that we can see some policy changes higher up or some zoning changes as necessary.
Okay. Ready for motion?
Sure.
Okay. Let me see here. Where are we? Okay. I would recommend to adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA. And number two, approve tentative track 2852 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Evidently, Ms. Wyatt is not going to second it, so I'll second it.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No.
And it passes per our
residential suburban land use category and is also within the village reserve line for Heritage Ranch. This schematic shows the location of the gatehouse and the gates in relation to track 1990. The gatehouse is shown as a blue box and the gates as red lines. The gatehouse would be just west of Cappy Culver Elementary School, and gates would be installed on Heritage Loop Road and Holly Drive. And here's the site plan. The overall site plan is shown on the top. On the bottom right, you can see the layout for Heritage Loop Road. It would have two inbound lanes, one for residents, one for guests. And the gate again the gatehouse is shown in blue. And then on Holly Drive, additional gates would be installed because of the location of the gatehouse being beyond Holly Drive. And in lieu of a second gatehouse, there would be a call box there. And this is the floor plan and elevations for the gatehouse. The gatehouse is approximately 160 square feet, and the design is similar to the design used at Heritage Ranch's main gatehouse on Gateway Drive. And your commission reviewed Heritage Ranch's main gatehouse back in November of 2005, and at that time, special conditions were applied. Those same conditions have been applied to this permit, and I'll just go through those individually. One of them is that public access be provided for public facilities beyond the gates, such facilities as a firehouse or any public facilities operated by the Heritage Ranch CSD. A landscaping plan would also be required, and bonding for removal of the gatehouse would be required. The reason for that last condition there is that the roads within Track 1990 were offered for dedication to the public but were not accepted. If at such a time those roads do become accepted by the county or another public entity, the gatehouse would then be required to be removed and they could call up the bond for that. So staff is recommending approval of conditional use permit DRC 2006-00111 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. I'm available for any questions.
Questions?
Yes, please. So this is a gatehouse, and is a gate already there, or this gatehouse includes the gate? I'm sorry, I'm not too clear.
There's not currently a gate there, but gates would be installed with this proposal.
Along with this house. Okay.
I had a question for the fire guy. He has a letter on page 517 dated January 26th, and it's to the North County team members and signed by Mr. Bullard. Anyway, under the gates, must be set back from the road minimum 30 feet from the intersection Highway 46 East. I think they're going to meet that. But did you mean to say another road?
Rick Swan, Cal Fire. No, sir. That's a standard letter that we do. We need a 30-foot requirement off of the main access so that our fire engines aren't out in the road when they're trying to make access to the gate. So that's a standard rule that we put in there.
Okay, but you said Highway 46 East and this...
Oh, I'm sorry. That's probably a misstatement on the road.
Right, so that should be from the intersection with...
What's the road?
Lake
Nacimiento
Drive.
Lake Nacimiento Drive.
Lake Nacimiento Drive, okay. So
sure. That would, I think that would meet the standards for 46 West.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah, we could get that easy.
Sorry.
Okay.
That was a misunderstanding.
I think there was a cut and paste from a previous
Probably was. Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. That's all the questions I had. The applicant here.
Good morning. Linda Ritchie, General Manager of Heritage Ranch. We're the applicant, but only because we have the deed for the road. But the project is actually going to be installed by the developer, who is Track 1990 LLC, in part under a settlement agreement with us. And if you were to go back to 1988 or 89, when this track was approved, there was no condition for a gatehouse or gates for reasons unknown. But in our agreement, they agreed to do that. So Kyle Coles is here to speak on the details from Tech Engineering on the design. There were some issues that came up, and we had to work them out. The gate ideally would have been located a little further up, but when the school came in and put their driveways in, it didn't correspond with where the gate was planned in everyone's mind originally across the street when the commercial center was approved by the Planning Commission. I think that came up because those driveways don't correspond either. So this is actually behind the first road that comes in, which is Holly Drive. So if you saw from the presentation, there would actually have to be a second gate located there also. And the idea that would be set back enough so that someone could pull in with a vehicle towing a trailer themselves, which would be the exact same style that those are. And that particular gate will continue to be manned 24/7 and always have the access for public facilities and guests, et cetera. But I will, you know, be honest that I can't guarantee the Heritage Loop Road would be manned 24/7 from the initiation of it. Part of that is because until we build more houses, we need more people that are willing to be employed out there. And I'm not sure that I'll have people available to be on it 24/7. We'd like it to be, though. In the meantime, we would have cards issued that are similar to the one I have here that we give membership ID cards now, and they have a proximity reader in them that they would wave that in front of the arm, and that's how they would get through. So other than that, I'm available for questions.
What's on the road now?
Nothing.
So Mr. and Mrs. Citizen just drive right on through?
What happened is we had temporary fencing. The developer had done that for us at the top of the hill. If you've driven out there, once you pass the housing development, you crest the hill, and they had put a barricade up there. And then when it comes down to connect to Inner Heritage Ranch, which is Heritage Road and Heritage Loop Road intersection, they had also put a barricade there. And we have had a lot of problems with that, of people breaking that down. So we're very anxious to get this gatehouse and gates installed. We would also be putting a camera system in to try to eliminate people from breaking through.
Okay, and you're satisfied with the conditions?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Just, I'm a little unclear here on, so if this gatehouse isn't manned and the condition suggests that the use of the gatehouse does not prevent free public access, are you suggesting there's not a conflict because there are currently no public facilities within the area?
The public facility within the area, the school, is outside the gate, and then they could have access through the main gate, which is Gateway Drive.
So you'll put up, if in fact it is not manned in, at night sometime, you'd put up a sign, people want to go to the VFW barbecue or something, could go to the main gate? And
correct. And I did have a question on that. And going back to when we were talking about the original gate on Gateway Drive, that went back to some conditional use permits that went back to 1972 with the intent that Gateway and Heritage Road would eventually be public. I don't know how Heritage Loop Road really corresponds to that, and if it's under the exact same condition, I don't even know if someone could answer that question.
The public works trail, looking up.
Because I understood doing the complete chronological history of Heritage Ranch, making that my mission in my spare time, to find that the intent originally with the property next door was that they would provide a second means of ingress and egress to Nossamill Lake Park, and the intent was originally Heritage and Road and Gateway at some point. And I think the alternative of Heritage Loop Road was something that someone looked into, but I don't think it was necessarily a commitment made from the county. So I don't know if this really applies under that circumstance.
The staff is looking that up.
Okay.
Thank you. Next speaker I have is Kyle Coles. And that's the last speaker slip I have.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Kyle Coles with Tech Engineering Consultants, representing Track 1990 LLC. As Ms. Ritchie pointed out, the biggest issue that we are facing right now is the temporary gates we installed. Unfortunately, the contractor had one of his water trucks stolen, and they pushed they pulled the gate over, the temporary gate. So we are pretty antsy to get the gatehouse installed. We are looking to be consistent architecturally and with the features of the gate to be consistent with the existing gatehouse. We have also added some on the site plan. I believe it's 510 is the exhibit you have. We are showing some retaining wall there. It isn't necessarily holding up any earth. It's more for visual aspect. And it also helps us to avoid people from going around the gate, circumventing the gate, people on motorcycles. Pedestrians can still get through there, but you get out of some of that concern, so that helps us. What Ms. Ritchie also pointed out is the gate on Holly Drive. We've set that back, working with Glenn Marshall of Public Works, set it back 50 feet from the face of the curb, so you have good distance to get a vehicle pulling, say, a boat off of the main Heritage Loop Road, and they're pulled off out of traffic. So that was one of the biggest concerns that we had. As you can see, we have the driveway from the elementary school. That was originally proposed to be about 150 feet east. And as Ms. Ritchie stated, that was to be consistent with the proposed commercial center. Now those driveways are off center. Itself provides is a link between Nossamill Lake Drive, G14, and Heritage Road. So it provides that secondary way in and out of the ranch entirely, which was a big component of this project that I think made a lot of people happy. It, frankly, as an engineer, it made me happy to see that you wouldn't be stuck inside with no way out except if you want to go over the hill. In terms of this project, the architecture is going to be consistent with the other gate. The gate's going to be installed, as Ms. Ritchie had mentioned. We spoke last night. The developer, her and myself, were involved in that. So the gates can be consistent with what you want to do. The HOA is going to be doing the gates. We'll be paying for the construction of those. So that is that's the plan, at least at this point.
Thank you. One question. You said the emergency access shouldn't be a problem since the fire department is already there, but I'm sure they have some sort of mutual aid agreement, and they got a big thing going on, and they're going to ask for help. So
correct.
How about the other engines? How do they get in?
It could come in through the main gates. These gates...
Maybe it's convenient for them to go to this gate, because there's where the fire is.
Correct.
How would they get in?
They're breakaway gates.
Yeah.
Well, get up to the microphone and speak to that.
They're breakaway gates. If all else failed, they could break through them. And we would give them cards as well if they really wanted to even wave the card. But if there was an emergency, we'd either go over there and open it right away and or they could break right through them.
Correct. These gates, I believe 1910 across the street has something a little more extravagant where you couldn't, you probably could, but you wouldn't want to, drive an engine through there. With these, they aren't, they're not concrete with iron gates that you have to force open. They are breakaway. So if worse came to worst, they could push right through those. It's likely not going to cause any damage to the trucks. It's not something you're going to blow through at 50 miles an hour, obviously. But at a reasonable speed, you can break these gates away.
Okay, I'm reading on the CDF's letter. They say it must have a Knox box or key chamber for fire department access. That's one of the requirements that they put on there. So I presume you're going to meet that. Otherwise, they're not signing up.
Correct. There's no reason we couldn't provide a lock box around the facility that's going to provide them a key. If it's not, say, an extreme emergency, they can use the key.
Thank you.
That will be provided for them.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak to this matter? And I'll close the public hearing, bring it back to the commission, and ask the CDF guy this conversation. Are you okay with that?
Yes, Rick Swan, CAL FIRE. Standard operating procedure for any gate will require a Knox box. All of our engines have a Knox key inside of their fire engine, and we can go within, access those keys, open the gate up and leave it open. It's standard operating procedure for any of our gates.
And that's going to work if you bring in mutual aid from Monterey County or some other odd
things? That's correct. In that case, what the first engine would probably end up doing, when we went through there, we'd open it up and it would stay open.
All right.
There could be some instances, you are correct, from Monterey, but we have engines that would be coming up there, I believe, that would get there before the Monterey engines would.
Thank you.
Chair Rose, Glenn Marshall with County Public Works. I have an answer for your question.
Okay.
With respect to the owner statement on the track map for track 1990, all the roads were offered to the public. So they are public roads.
Well, they're offered, but they haven't been accepted.
They haven't been accepted, no.
And so this condition is required just in case in some delirious moment you guys accepted those.
Us or some other public entity, correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Questions? Motions?
Yes. I have a few more questions, please. I looked at this from our staff report, from our packet, really, as a gatehouse, and I didn't think too much about the gate, I guess, itself. And so will staff help me understand a little, please, what our county policy is on gating off roads? I guess we've got the condition in here, I see, on our staff page 5-5, that conditions are that the use of the gatehouse until Heritage Loop Road is accepted. It's condition C, 1C. Use of the gatehouse which does not prevent free public access to public facilities by gate attendants or other device. So we are hearing from the applicant's representative here that this may not be manned. And so the suggestion is that because the public could go to some other road and get in, this isn't an issue. But to me, this would seem to somehow impede public access if you can't make it here.
No, Mr. Yes? Chairman, Cami Griffin County Planning, I think until there are enough residents out in Track 1990 that they'll be able to easily man this gatehouse 24/7, either providing...
I heard mention of trails or something that would be accessed there that we're promising the public access.
I don't believe any of the trails have been accepted for the public. It's all private.
Is that the case? I just would hate for us to promise public access here and then make it more difficult. Because you may say it's just an easy call to go around the Heritage, the other gate. I'm not sure what is the distance between the gate and the other gate.
It's very close.
But look at the situation. Now we've got a fence up. You can't get in now, okay? Let's not approve this. Let's leave it as it is. You got a fence up. No one can get in, period. We approve this thing. Now we'll have it manned sometimes and eventually 24/7. But we wouldn't be improving the access.
But is the current fence allowed? Is the current fence is impeding all access?
Yes.
It's a construction fence. From what I understand, temporary. Project manager, there is no public trail located within Heritage Ranch. These are all private facilities. They're all maintained by the Homeowners Association. And really, you're getting permission to cross when you go through their gate. If I want to use their ramp to launch my boat, I have to pay a significant fee, and they know they're giving me permission to cross and use their ramp. If I want to go use their RV park, it's the same principle. And I go through the main gate, similar to entering Lake Nacimiento Resort, which is also gated and armed. That's not the right terminology.
Well, maybe it is. My point might be maybe it is the terminology here that we need to be using.
It's the same thing. I'm entering into a private resort, and they're giving me permission to use their resort facilities. There is a public launch ramp there at Lake Nacimiento Resort, but I pay a fee for that, and I still am given permission to enter that. So it's very similar. If at some point county accepts all the roads, and parks accepts the trails, and we take over all of the maintenance, then yes, those gatehouses have to come down, and that's why they've been conditioned this way. Both the gatehouses would have to come
down. Okay, thank you. I guess just a further question then, less specific, more general. Do we have some general county policy on gating off roads, on gates across roads?
My understanding is you can't gate any public road. Private roads are conditional usually by CDF, and CDF has standards to private roads, 30-foot. Public Works usually tries to keep about 50 feet. But no public road or public access can be gated, just private roads.
And what CDF does, is if we have a request to gate a private road, they'll actually look to see to make sure that that serves no other public road. And we actually did have an instance where a neighborhood wanted to gate. CDF looked at it, said, you know, no, this ultimately could connect to a private road, and we're not going to support your gate, and it was not supported.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussions, motions?
All right. Where are we here? Oh, recommend to approve conditional use permit DRC 2006-00111 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. And moving on to our final item of the day, item 6. And we'll welcome Mr. Marshall back. A different Mr. Marshall.
Item 6, the hearing to consider request by John Munch for a conditional use permit, is located west of the city of Paso Robles. County file number DRC 2005-00012, Karen Nall, project manager.
Good morning, commissioners. Karen Nall with the Planning Division. Today before you we have the Munch Winery project. It is a conditional use permit. It's located off Adelaida Road on a private road named Vine Hill. It's within the residential rural land use category. This aerial of the site, if you look down to the bottom of the slide, is Adelaida Road, and this black road is Vine Hill. Vine Hill serves, I believe, 5 different parcels. This is the existing house located on the site. It's about a 9-acre, close to 10-acre parcel, and this is, I lost my existing winery building. This is a site plan, again, showing Vine Hill Road as it flows through a few different properties. And this is the approximate site of the proposed and fermentation and processing and on two levels. Elevations, so it will be cut into the hillside. So the reason we're here today for a CUP is because it's zoned residential rural, and any ag processing in residential rural requires conditional use permit approval. They are requesting setback modifications. The site is approximately 320 feet long, wide, so they need setback modifications, 140 on one side and 190 on the other. Following the when the staff report came out, the applicant contacted me, an agent, and would like to increase the case production that they originally requested to 5,000 cases. And they would also like to add that they'd like to participate in the industry-wide events. So I do have a list here of some corrections for you. So some minor corrections to condition number one, the 3,000 case be modified to read 5,000 cases, and condition three to be worded no events are authorized other than wine industry-wide events. And then one more correction, the agent noticed that finding on page 6-7, and I apologize, I don't have this written up, finding number G, we need to add a front setback of 140 feet and rear setback of 190 feet. And that's all the corrections I had. Staff is recommending adoption of the negative declaration and approval of the project based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B. And I'm available for any questions.
That rear setback was 190?
Correct.
Okay, I must disclose that I did visit the site with the applicant and the applicant's agents and discuss things, which I presume the applicant's agent will bring up. If not, I'll ask them the questions. Any other questions, comments for staff?
No.
Open public hearing. Applicant's agent, Ms. Kirk.
Good morning. I'm Jamie Kirk representing La Cuvier Winery this morning. I do have a brief PowerPoint presentation, if Ms. Snall can put that up. If we can start my time when the presentation gets up, I'd appreciate that.
And while we're doing that, a question that comes up that staff or an applicant can answer. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to change from 3,000 cases to 5,000, and they want to include the winery events. Without reading the entire negative deck again, did the negative deck project description talk about cases and no special events, or
the case production was based on 3,000. However, with that gets into wastewater and total water usage, and wastewater is pretty minimal. So, I felt we could that the ND was still adequate. And then let me read through that ND for any comments regarding events. What I look at for as staff doing doing projects when industry-wide events are asked for is I basically look at parking. I look at, is the site large enough, or is there some set-aside area for more parking, sides of the road? I felt on this particular site that there is some parking up top where it flattens up where the house is, and that they are widening Vine Hill, and I believe there should be significant parking along the road for events.
Okay. Now we've got Ms. Kirk's.
Thank you. I'll run through this briefly, as Ms. Nall did a great job running through the project specifics. The project is on Vine Hill Road. It's a private road, about a 10-acre parcel in the RR land use category. Existing uses on site. There are no events proposed, meaning the events that aren't allowed under the land use ordinance. So typically the land use ordinance exempts the industry-wide event weekends as not counting against you for events. So we'd like to participate in the industry-wide events. There is some parking on site, and another practice that Le Cuvier does, because they are a wine club-based winery, is that they'll carpool in, bring their club members in vans, so to minimize the impacts to the neighbors. They've been operating there. They've paid a lot of care and attention to cooperating and not having impacts on their neighbors, so they've looked at that in the past. And again, the floor plan, as Karen noted, two stories, processing on the bottom, and then this area up here used for barrel storage, and again, cut into the hillside to minimize grading, preserve oak trees, and also minimize the visual impacts. We are requesting a setback modification based on the distance of the width of the parcel. It's 390 feet. There is no way to meet 200 on each side because we obviously need more than 400 feet of the width. On the aerial, it shows the location of the winery located here. The original proposal was to put the winery over in this location, and this location resulted in a significant amount of grading, tree removals, tree impacts. So working with staff, the applicant looked at a better place for location, and the location that you're reviewing today was a compromise between the owner and staff and seemed to work best for everyone. At that point, I'm going to conclude my comments, and John Munch, one of the owners of Le Cuvier Winery, would like to provide some comments on his winery. Thank you.
Good morning. John Munch, Le Cuvier Winery. A couple of the things that we're trying to do is, as was mentioned, we've been in that location operating continuously. It's coming on 24 years since 1983. We have done a lot of our processing off-site, and a lot of that has been due to the change in the industry in this area over the past number of years. We've found that right now we can become, and we are, a fully club-based winery, which no longer means that we have to be in a location where we could have the general public come in. And that was one of the main reasons that we had the second site that we operated out also. One of my pet peeves in the wine industry, and one of the things that we're trying to work with, or will work with very closely, there were two facts. One, we wanted to build a winery that's essentially very, very low energy use. Building it into the hillside, we won't have refrigeration. We'll have very light electrical use in the place. And my big pet peeve is water use, given especially what goes on in this area. So we think with the treatment that we're working with, we plan to be able to recover approximately 90% of the wash water, as well as lower the amount of water that's being used across the board. We're down currently to about 2 gallons per gallon of wine produced, which is very low, and I think we can take that even below that. So that's the basic overview of what we're attempting to do. And as was mentioned by Jamie Kirk, the main thrust now is to bring the mass of our production, if you will, to the location that we've been operating, and just financially it makes the most sense for us also, and just consolidating everything into one location. So any questions?
Yes, I have one. Will you be collecting rainwater?
I've thought of that, and part of the thought was to use the most of on the layout that was shown showed that the barrel room was not 100% bermed or covered. We're still trying to do that. The front part, which the roof, because it's just showing a bit of a peak roof that the architect had a lot of fun with, but I don't think we're going to have that. It's going to be more or less of a shed roof. And if we can collect the water off of that and to drain down to the front drain that then can be picked up and used again for landscape, yes, definitely.
Great.
My question was also on the water recovery. You said 90% recovered, so that just goes for landscaping?
It would be, we're presuming that that's not going to be potable water, but can be used for landscaping. And I'm working with Joe Chouinard, wastewater engineer. We're trying to come up with systems that will do the best for that and give us the greatest recovery and yet allow us then to use the water. Frankly, the amount of water that would be used by the winery will probably not be even a fraction of what we would use for landscaping. It's a very small amount of use. So it's... we'll have to, you know, current landscaping requires us to use water, and we'll continue to have to use some water. But bottom line is the water used by the winery in processing would be offsetting the normal use of water that we would have to draw.
Were they dry farmed or irrigated?
They were on a drip before. Everything I'm working with now would be dry farm, and that's been. A number of the vineyards I work with, we purchase, obviously, the majority of our grapes, and not right now all of our grapes. A good number of those are coming from dry farm vineyards, and that's a preference.
Okay, so would I be correct in assuming your water use relative to your irrigated days wouldn't change?
Well, they wouldn't change, yeah.
In other words, the winery water will be offsetting the irrigation water of your...
Would be offsetting the irrigation water and or landscape that currently exists, or landscape that we have to put in relative to the new building.
A question on dry farm. The year we've just come through, can you still not...
Yes, I think so. In the past, my experience was that... When was that drought we had here? Was the early 90s, the real bad one? I bought grapes from both the... the old, what we call the Wilpeta, the Tennessee vineyard, and the Martinelli vineyard, which were been very old dry farm vineyards. And towards the end of the drought, those vines didn't know there was a drought, and the irrigated vines were really the ones having trouble from the irrigation, the salts building up and not being flushed from the soil. During your startup, if you don't, you know, the initial years of developing a dry farm vineyard, you do want to have some rainfall. If you don't, you're in trouble unless you can do some watering at that point. But beyond that, they set very deep roots.
Yeah. Great.
And could you, Ms. Kirk, could you point out the one oak tree that's going?
Yes, if we go back to the aerial. I think my box was right on it. There will be one oak tree that will be required to be removed for construction of the winery, and we've been required to incorporate that into the landscape plan, and that's how we will achieve our mitigation.
Okay.
And I looked at the mitigated negative declaration that was written by staff, and your question was, does the water use looked at in this document calculate to the 5,000 case facility, that jump from 3,000 cases to 5,000 cases? And the water use assumed for peak production was 400 gallons per day during peak use, and the standard that we're using right now from Wallace Group is 402 gallons a day, so it is consistent.
I'm not sure where you're getting that. I'm looking at page 641, and I see on water use, based on project description shown below, a reasonable worst case for water would likely be 300 gallons per day. Where'd you get 400? And I saw wastewater.
I guess I was looking on page 16, and it talked about 400 gallons per day under the impact paragraph.
You were looking under wastewater. Yeah, mm-hmm. I see the 400 there.
Right. And I think with the implementation of the conservation measures that Mr. Munch talked about, you can see that the water use will be recycled and used for landscaping. And
Mr. Chairman, staff would actually recommend a couple of changes to the negative declaration as part of your action today. And that would be one of them, too.
Okay, we'll finish the public hearing, and we'll get to that. Okay. Any other questions for the applicants? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public want to make a comment? Everybody not? closing the public hearing, bringing it back to staff. Now how are we going to deal with the negative declaration?
Okay. Between Karen and I, on your page 6-41, where it does talk about the 300 gallons, it is an approximation, so we'd recommend changing that to about 300 to 400 gallons. It doesn't change the conclusions reached through the mitigations. And then on page 6-39, it does specifically under the impact paragraph say no special events or wine industry events would be held. That just needs to be changed to no special events would be held. Again, it doesn't change the conclusion. And Karen, there was one more.
Second paragraph under impact, where it quotes 3,000 cases, should be changed to 5,000 cases.
And interestingly enough, this is in the noise section.
Yeah.
So it was just talking about noise generated from truck trips, and I'm assuming with the applicant's concurrence that this would also not change. Found one more event, that same paragraph.
Ag and the processing facility. And as we've heard, I mean, some concerns about what's a reasonable nexus and how much of the wine, the grapes going into production should be on site. But we just have no grapes here. So, again, if you look at this from afar, we have a commercial processing operation on residential rural land, and the production stuff getting shipped in and shipped out. So I guess certainly our laws allow this, but I'm not sure we need to make the modifications to the setbacks in this case. I'm not sure that maybe this is the most appropriate site for the expansion if we can't meet our setback rules.
Look at it this way. There are he buys his grapes from other vineyards, and I ask about one in particular, and it's the Zinfandel grapes that are grown some distance away. And so here's an ag person growing some Zinfandel grapes, but he's not processing them. He just wants to grow them. And now we get this other person who wants to do not industrial processing, ag processing. He wants to convert grapes into wine. And so we've benefited ag production by him having this facility. If we come up with an idea where if you're going to have a winery, you can only have it, you can only process your own grapes, then that leaves out all these people that are greater than 1 mile from a collector arterial from having tasting rooms or things like that.
Well, certainly some people are accepted, but that's where I'm a bit frustrated by the ongoing sort of, lack of depth of the argument, because we can still have the processing, but we can put it somewhere else other than on ag-zone parcels and residential-zone parcels. Well, we have industrial-zone parcels and commercial parcels, zones that are centralized, that might make more sense to have these activities.
But then they're usually in cities. And so now you've got the smell of grape composting and these ag things and wastewater overwhelming the... I have no idea what's
well,
in that.
We have the sewer in the cities. And we have water and sewer, although you're right, that's impacted as well.
But I would suggest that I'm not a sewer person, but I guess there are certain times they're putting stuff down the sewer that I'll bet the sewer plant has a hard time digesting. I have no
idea. I'm not a wastewater specialist either.
Nor am I.
But But I'm just frustrated by the framing of this suggestion. And I open it up for discussion here. I'm not sure that I'm against this project, but we have these setback requirements, and maybe every residential rural parcel isn't a place for a winery. Maybe this isn't an appropriate place to bring the public in to have more processing if we can't meet our own codes here. And again, I understand the intent, I think, of this is to encourage active agriculture, but we still do have places where the wineries, the production facilities, can be put. And I think our industrial areas in the cities are probably better places for that. So to suggest that by denying a project like this and not putting the processing facility on this residential rural parcel means that we're not supporting agriculture isn't true, because this processing facility still could go in an industrial zoned area. We're not denying the possibility of the processing facility. There's a distinction. It's just we're not...
Go back to your air.
It can't go
back
anywhere.
To your air pollution control concerns. Okay, so let's make this guy put this his place in downtown Paso or Templeton or someplace.
In
like
an
that.
Industrial area of Paso, let's say.
So what's he going to do every morning? Now he gets out of bed and he rolls down the hill a little bit and he piddles with his wine, and then he comes up for lunch and goes back in the afternoon and doesn't start up his truck the whole day. But if he had to go do this in town, he would be driving back and forth to town.
Well, he would, but there's a chance that somebody might work with him. I don't know. We could ask him whether he works all alone. But the grapes are also being trucked in here, and the bottles trucked out, and the customers are coming in. So if we want to count trips, probably there are more customers closer to Paso downtown than out here. So again, I find we've made these codes, these setbacks were agreed upon before my time, but I'm not sure always when it's the opposition, but sometimes we have, and we've chosen to override that opposition.
Well, I won't go there.
Okay. Well, you know, I think our county regulations provide ag processing in the rural areas because it's, if you moved it all to town, I think we would have a problem. So I can't. I think we should keep it in the rural areas because it's. I think it just works better that way. If we got to move this one to town again, then we're going to move all the rest to town.
And they did used to have vines there, and we heard his intention is to bring vines back.
A few vines, yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the map that's up there now might help give you an idea of the kind of, I apologize if it's not readable on your small screen, the area that where this parcel is located. It's actually the last of a little bit of finger of RR that comes out from the city of Paso. It's surrounded by rural lands and ag. All of, if Karen can make the pointer go, all of the area there is all agriculture. So that area could serve this parcel if the grapes are in that area. It's very close by, and it could become a point for these folks who want to remain only vineyard growers, not also winery owners, a place for them to have their grapes be processed inside the county. Versus having to go outside the county. But we did want to just kind of provide this kind of a unique area because it's just this finger of RR that comes out into an agricultural area and might otherwise have been designated agriculture except these were existing small lots, which is why he's struggling with meeting those setbacks that are typically very easy to make in an agricultural parcel that's larger.
And agriculture is one of the purpose and character statements for rural residential land, if I recall. More,
that's,
it's considered
a small,
like hobby.
Right, a small-scale agriculture, you're right, is part of the purpose and character statements. This particular area also, had it been designated agriculture, it's very steep, oak-covered, typically
would have been not given the agriculture land use category. It would have been given the rural lands land use category, but again, and we again wouldn't be sitting here today because it's really the residential rural land use category that's triggering this. But because the existing parcels were small, when we went in to zone this area, we just tried to recognize that there's existing small lots there.
I can corroborate that. I'm probably belying my years of experience. I wrote the draft Adelaide area plan, and we only had just a few areas of residential rural, and they were reflecting lots that were already subdivided to 10 acres or less, generally, or less than 20. And this was really just kind of an extension of an existing residential rural area that was coming out from Paso Robles. And the majority of the areas, rural lands are ag, and the way we picked ag was that they generally had better soils and less dense chaparral cover, and ownership sizes made a difference too. And slow. I was wondering what that hand signal was.
I was kind of wondering what she was doing there too. But
and topography as well, you know, steepness of slope. Thank you. Yes, it was, but appropriate in this case. Another thing that needs to be said, now this is residential rural, and your point's valid, that it's a discretionary call. It's a conditional use permit, not a minor use permit, to do a winery in residential rural. But this county's policies, and we were just talking about this yesterday with the Central Coast Wine Growers Association, do not make a distinction that grapes need to come from the same site as the winery. There's a variety of reasons for that, both industry-oriented, land-use-oriented, economic-driven. But it really has been an accepted approach within our policy framework to allow grapes to come from other places. There are a lot of small vineyards in the county that it's nice to have a place for them to be used. Winemakers like the ability to enter into contracts with individual growers to add to their blend. It's not common for small wineries to be entirely estate, meaning that the grapes are grown on their side or on properties within their control. And I'd be reluctant at this point to say that alone should be a reason to not allow a winery in residential rural. But you're absolutely correct. You need to look at neighborhood fit, the issue of the size of and shape of the site. But this is not an unusual occurrence in this particular area.
On site, and it's his intent to grow on site. And another component, and Mr. Munch can talk about it, is he purchases his grapes from growers in the Adelaide area. So he is already serving the growers. This is a winery. Wineries are considered agriculture based on our ordinances as well as state guidelines. So it's an agricultural use, and it's important for the industry to have these facilities like this facility in which they can sell their grapes. It keeps the grapes in our county, it keeps the tax dollars in our county, and it supports local business and local agriculture.
Right, and I think we should be encouraging this kind of a thing. You know, the small winemaker on a small property, he doesn't want to buy 100 acres, so he buys 20 acres of rural residential property and, you know, does a little hobby graping and does a little buying from someone else who's growing them on a smaller one. Because I've heard that only 50 or 60% of the grapes that we grow in this county end up getting processed here. So that means they got to get processed up in Napa or someplace like that. And if you're going to take your crop that distance, now that's probably difficult for a small, you know, 5-acre vineyard sort of person to do. So having these little wineries seems to me that's helping agriculture. Yeah.
Well, I would agree that it could. We've just now heard that the applicant's representative state that the grapes are being purchased from the very local area. But we don't know that. In general, we don't have any condition of that or promise of that. So we don't actually know where the grapes are coming from. So I'd just like us to work toward being a little more clear if it's protect agriculture in the local area, that we know or require that's where they're coming from, that there be that nexus between the local agriculture and the production facility. So that's why I bring this up, and I hope we'll be working
toward
that.
Micromanaging we would do of this ag thing. I mean,
it just makes sense for this guy to grow wine or to make wine that is best grown in Edna Valley, some Chardonnay kind of a thing. You know, this is kind of a red wine sort of a winery. I suppose he has some white wines, but it doesn't make sense to put up a little winery in Paso Robles and go down to Edna Valley and buy grapes.
Well, I don't know. You could argue that it doesn't make sense for Gallo or some of the big guys maybe to buy a lot of thousands of acres here in San Luis Obispo and ship their grapes to Modesto to process. Maybe at some level either.
But they use truck and trailers. You know, they have huge rigs where these guys are running around with pickup trucks.
I don't want government getting into the business of telling production ag where they should plant and do this and do that, because if you look at history, where that happens, they make a bullocks of it, and people tend to starve. So I hope that we never get in that area. I think the ag production should be controlled by the people that are doing it. And I don't care if they come from Monterey County or not. I think it should be remain free to let them make the decisions they have to make to feed us. We have the best production in this country of any country in the world, and I want to keep it that way. We have the best fed people here, and I don't want to start interfering with that.
Yes, Mr. Munch is going to have some, you know, we're kind of going on here, but this is our last item of the day, and we're going to quit pretty darn soon here.
If I could make a comment, hopefully give you some comfort on the source of the grapes. As a small winery, just at our current production is 3,000 cases, and we've requested the increase to 5,000 cases, not necessarily with the intent of growing to that size, but just not to box ourselves in case the dynamics of the industry change. Our 3,000 cases are costing, estimating this year, the grapes are going to be about $120,000 to $130,000. If I am not buying premium quality grapes as a small winery, I cannot compete with Gallo. I have to have a bottle that sells at a certain price, and therefore I have to use grapes that are very special, and as a consequence, it's West Side grapes. I hope nobody hears from the East Side. But West Side grapes are very important to our position. So we buy all our grapes from vineyards that are going back out into the Adelaide area, and it is core, if you will, to our ability to sell the wines and be a club-based winery. As a small winery, you really have to be in that kind of niche. I understand your concern on is he buying from the Delta or someplace like that, because that's really not supporting a local agriculture. But a small winery really can't do that. You can only sell the emperor's clothes once, and if you don't have the real goods there, you can't be successful. So that I think that's one of the core issues there.
All right. Are we ready for a motion or anything here?
Yeah, we have a full day on this. I think this kind of thing will come up again next week. So.
Their sources of their fruit, and all I can say is our policy framework in this county at this point has been not to go there, to let that be market-driven.
And I would hope that there's some people like Mr. Munch that show up and give us their perspective, not just Mr. Lilly's, but you know, where they, some little people and some big people would give us their perspective.
I encourage the association members to do just that.
Ready for motion?
Sure.
All right. I recommend to adopt the negative deck in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA and approve conditional use permit DRC 2005-00121 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And Exhibit A was, the findings is Exhibit A, and we added winery adjustment on G, a front setback of 140 feet, and a rear setback. So we added rear setback of 190 feet. And then Exhibit B, we changed approval development number one to make it 5,000 cases. Instead.
Are you going to use Ms. Griffin's handout?
All right, yeah. This is the handout by staff on the changes in 1 and 3. And then the negative deck, we changed page 641 to 300 to 400 gallon of water. Page 639, we added industry events, and 636 we added 5,000 cases. Isn't that all of them?
I believe it is. Only we didn't. Did we?
One more on 636. That was also the industry-wide recognized.
Oh. And wasn't that 639, or both pages?
Both pages.
Oh, okay.
Right. In both cases, we recognize that there would be special events, but no
right. Okay.
General tasting. Okay, we have a motion. How about a second?
Yes, I'll second.
All right. Roll call.
Commissioner Malsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. And what should we do about the materials we received today?
I move that they be included in the record.
Are we going to second that?
Oh, yes. Sure. Let's include them.
Well, let's do that by all means. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Okay. Do we need to adjourn to a special date or is this?
That's actually a regular meeting, but go ahead and continue or adjourn the meeting to May 10th anyway, just to be safe.
So move.
To May what?
10th.
10th.
10th, okay. With that, we are adjourned, and I thank you. Look at that.
Going.
Bye, gosh, and bye.